Welcome to another episode of Convergence. I'm Ellen Taylor here alongside Michelle McAloon, where we look at issues in culture and faith and kind of get a new perspective on things. Good morning, Michelle. How are you? Well, I guess it's night there with you. Michelle is.
That's right.
We're a little remote.
Be spot in Germany. That is correct.
Good. Well, we're glad that we can get together at least in this way. We started to do a couple episodes on grief where we wanted to talk about things communally, as a country in a world, we're grieving a lot in families and just across communities. So continuing that story on grief and looking at it and how we can get through it with each other supporting, we're going to take a look a bit of using some of the books from the Bible to help us, particularly Lamentations and Psalms. So for that, we're bringing in an expert. And I'd like to welcome in Mark Vigrup. He is the lead pastor at College Park Church in Indianapolis. He's the author of several books, one including Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, Discovering the Grace of Lament. So good morning and welcome in, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me on your program and for your interest in this really important topic right now.
It is so important right now as we grieve both personally and communally in so many different ways in a year that has been challenging, if not for personal loss, but for loss of certainty.
Yeah, for sure. It's 2020 will be known for a lot of things, but it won't be known as the year of comfort, right? It's been a year of just ongoing stress and difficulty.
It has been. But thankfully, there's a Christian response to this, isn't there?
There is, yeah. The historic biblical language of lament has served God's people throughout the centuries. Tragically, many of us in our contemporary settings are unfamiliar with this language. And through a personal journey that my wife and I were on in Lord's hard but gracious providence, we discovered the grace of lament and have had a passion for the last couple of years to try and help people to re-engage with this important, helpful, and I think really redemptive prayer language.
Why do you think we've lost sight of it? Is that we want to look more at the happy things in the Bible and kind of walk past these dark periods or low periods?
I think a lot of it has to do with our experience and our expectation. I think particularly in American culture, we tend to have a very optimistic perspective, at least certain segments of American culture and population. And I think that we're a little bit addicted to that, you know, the sun will come up tomorrow kind of perspective. And when that doesn't fit with our experience, they don't have a good, robust understanding of how to process what's happened to them. And then additionally, because of their experience, they've not had to work through kind of the difficult contours of grief and difficulty. So most of us don't set out to study lament. Most of us, lament finds us. And when you find it, it's a very helpful and redemptive conversation to have with the Lord.
We have to ask the question because we don't like to grieve. And if we don't like to grieve, then we probably don't even understand what the word lament is or what is lament?
I would define it this way, that lament is a prayer in pain that leads to trust. So every one of those words is important. So it's a prayer. So it's a language that I'm using to talk to God individually or collectively with other Christians. It's a prayer in pain. So it's a unique prayer form for when people are struggling with the brokenness of the world. It's a prayer in pain that leads. It's designed to be a forward-moving prayer language. So it's not a cul-de-sac for your sorrows, but rather a conduit to help you move forward. And then finally, it leads to trust, that to rightly understand lament means that I draw the correct biblical conclusion that even though life is hard, God can still be trusted. And, you know, I think that grief is common for all human beings. In fact, you know, we enter the world, our first sound that we make is a protest, right? We cry when we leave the warm confines of our mother's womb. So all human beings cry, but I suggested in my book that while to cry is human, to lament is Christian, because it's where we take our pain to God and say, God, I know you're good, but I don't know how this fits, and yet I'm still going to choose to trust you. And lament leads us to that right conclusion when our eyes are filled with tears.
Do you have a guideline for people that maybe are listening to this and going to open the Bible and look at the book of Lamentations at this point and say, how do they start? How do they open themselves up to get the most of what this book in the Bible has to offer?
Yeah, well, let me answer that question in two ways. First, just a general structure for lament, particularly seen in the Psalms. You do see it in Lamentations. Psalms, you know, one out of every three Psalms is a lament. So really interesting to think that that a third of the official Psalmbook of God's people was in this minor key. And most laments follow a particular form. They don't, or I should say, have particular ingredients, where we turn to God, we refuse to give him the silent treatment, we keep praying, we lay out our complaints, we claim his promises and ask boldly, and then choose to trust. So if you think of it this way, as turn, complain, ask, and trust. And then particularly in the book of Lamentations, which is the longest lament really in the Bible, we see a progression over the course of five chapters as Jeremiah is lamenting the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And you see this turn, complain, ask, trust dynamic play out over five chapters, and you especially see it in chapter 3, where it reaches the apex of the turning, where Jeremiah says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, his mercies never come to an end. Lamentations is a really helpful book in that it robustly deals with the problems of sorrow and grief and all those tensions. But here's another reason why I love that book, is because it ends with unresolved pain. The book ends, chapters 4 and 5, with, Lord, like, it's still hard, and this isn't going to go on forever, right? And that's just kind of how the book ends, which I love that, because that's how my life is. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, and most of the stories in my life have not turned out like a Hallmark movie where everything's happy and blissful at the end. And I love Lamentations because it leaves the conclusion kind of hanging, and yet Jeremiah says, but you can still trust the Lord in that. And I think that's really good.
It's so true that we tend to learn, if we choose to, out of pain more readily than we learn out of the good times. And I don't know why we're made that way, but we are. That's the only time we seem to be able to listen to God.
Yeah, you know, Solomon wisely said, you know, it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. And I think once you think about it, it becomes intuitively obvious that, you know, you learn more at funerals than you do at parties. And grief tends to awaken us to our limitations. It's sort of like divinely giving smelling salt for us to realize, whoa, I was not as in control of my life as what I thought I was. And there are things that I need to think about here. Parties tend to dull the senses, and nothing wrong with a party, but it tends to not remind us about the gravity of life, whereas sorrow tends to surface our limitations, our need for God's help. And that's why, you know, hard providences, moments when God allows things that are difficult in our life, they become moments of unbelievable lessons for our lives.
I feel like in listening to Mark is that our world in 2020 could use a bit of Lamentations in its in its own reflection of itself, because we seem to be in the midst of it, but we don't seem to be some days learning anything from it. If nothing else, it seems Lamentations is at least about going through processes and coming out better on the other side. What kind of advice could the world get from reading Lamentations in this year?
Yeah, I think that if you read Lamentations, you'll see that God's purposes are always kind, but not always clear. And when you're in the middle of an unclear moment, you could make the mistake to think that God has been unkind. Take, for instance, the greatest example of this would be the crucifixion of Jesus on Good Friday. If you just did a freeze frame at the death of Jesus, you would look at that and think, well, that's a disaster. And there'd be lots of lament. Jesus himself even quoted a lament psalm on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? But we know the rest of the story. We know the resurrection that follows. And so when you understand both of those, God's purposes makes sense. But in the moment, there's only grief. And so part of the thing that you can learn from the Book of Lamentations is that God is always faithful. We just don't always see how his faithfulness is going to work out in the moment. You know, William Cooper has a line in his hymn that God moves in mysterious ways. He says that these dark clouds are full of mercy and they will burst on our head. And there's just this beautiful reminder that behind a frowning providence, is what he writes, God hides a smiling face. So that's one way that the Book of Lamentations can help us. The other way is a recognition that there are idols that surface. And if you look at Lamentations chapter 4, there's a number of idols that are just identified in that text. Financial security and fixating on it, putting our trust in political leaders, trusting overly so in spiritual leaders, and even craving cultural comfort. Like, I just want my life back. Like, all that stuff is right there. And it helps us to be instructed by how people in the past process their grief so that we can now say in our present day, maybe I ought to do the same. And that's one of the ways that the book can be incredibly helpful and instructive.
One of the best things that I read in your book was trusting the character of God.
Mm-hmm.
Is letting God be God. And how you let God be God is, one, you don't give him the silent treatment, but that you trust God, that God is working through us, is working our redemption through us. And when we're in pain, that's very, very difficult to do.
It is. And that's one of the traps that the enemy wants to use and to tempt us to think that God has been unkind or he's been unfair or that he's not trustworthy. And lament helps to reinforce the commitment to choose to trust in the midst of a season that is incredibly difficult and painful. Every lament has a turn in it, usually connected to the words like but or even so. Psalm 13, for instance, after saying, you know, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? The psalmist ends with, but I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart will rejoice in your salvation. I will sing because the Lord has dealt bountifully with me. And so lament helps us to see that there are things that we can do when we're stuck in sorrow. Namely, we can talk to God and to reaffirm what we believe in the midst of our sorrow, that God is a God who can be trusted. You can trust his heart, even though you can't see exactly what he's doing.
You talk a bit in the third part of your book about the community application of lament, that it's redemptive as a community. Can you share some of your thoughts on that with us?
Yeah, I mean, grief can be an individual thing, but it also is a collective dynamic where either A, we're caring for someone, we're joining them in their grief. And, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that because, unfortunately, Christian communities are not great at understanding how to navigate the difficulties of grief. We tend to live in the kind of two ditches. One ditch would be denial. People come to worship and they're like, everything's fine, because they think real Christians talk like that. Or this ditch of despair, like if I struggle, I must not even be a Christian. And so the community can come around a person and to reinforce, look, we're going to walk with you and in your lament. We're not going to keep our distance, but we're going to join in your sorrow. The other way that the community can help in terms of redeeming that pain is to remind that person and collectively call one another to reinforce the truths that are very much on the line in this moment, that we can believe that God is trustworthy. For instance, I've gone to Sunday morning worship before with a burden in my heart lamenting something, and the songs that we're singing, they're just words at that moment. But because other people are singing them, I begin to join in their singing. And what's strange is I walked in kind of not really engaging with those words, maybe not even believing them, and the confidence and the assurance of being with other people, it helps to build my own belief muscles and say, yep, you know what, that is true. And my friends are helping me to be reminded that is true. So in that way, there's not only individual laments, but also corporate laments that were designed to help the community, help individuals. And then sometimes entire communities are suffering. And so what do you say when, as a people, you're all grieving together? And that's really what 2020 has done. Like, everyone is grieving. And so what do we say in those moments together as a means of maybe unity to try and help one another, learn how to process this grief as a collective whole?
In reading your book, and about Jeremiah, because it's Jeremiah who is talking about the fall of Jerusalem in the first three chapters of Lament, I think, of Lamentations, or the first two chapters. And those first two chapters are pretty gnarly about Jerusalem. And when I was reading it, I kind of wondered, are we going through a modern day Jerusalem? Have we turned our backs on God? So a lot of what has happened isn't God inflicting it upon us. It's us inflicting it upon ourselves, because we have turned our backs to God, as we can see politically, socially, and culturally.
Mm. You know, that's a great question. And I think we need to start with saying yes, and I don't know.
Yes. So, you're absolutely right. Where does it begin? Where does it end? Right.
Right. But you know, because
there's
a possibility there. Right. Because at one level, every society since the Garden of Eden has turned its back on God. And yet there does come moments when the collective accumulation of our societal rebellion warrants and necessitates divine discipline in order to wake us up. So quite frankly, I'm operating in this space of, I don't know to what extent God has particular reasons that are focused on bringing this hardship. But what I do know is every hardship that comes is designed to help me, as a follower of Jesus, become more formed into the image and likeness of Christ. So regardless of the reason, all hardship has the same net effect. And I think the danger would be for us to be overly prescriptive. Oh, this is why God is doing this, as if in some cases we just want to get God, we want to get on the good side of God again. So let's fix this so that we can go back to life as it was before. Or we ignore it and say, no, this isn't because of me. It's because of those people. That's why this is going down. And instead, I think hardship, rightly understood, should generate a humble posture of saying, God, I want my heart to be right with you through the person and work of Jesus as we're walking through this season of difficulty.
You bring up two really good points on how we think in the 21st century. It's someone else's fault, God, and let's just get through this without learning anything about why we got into it. We just want to get back and feel better again and slap the Band-Aid on it. And it's so true. I mean, there needs to be a collective deeper thinking about issues like this in order for us as a society to move forward. And if you look at media in particular, I don't think we're going to find anything in depth there a lot of times. It's just, let's get back through to the fun and the games.
Ellen, that's a great point, because you talk about truth rehearsed. Hope springs from truth rehearsed. So Lamentations is really about anchoring our hearts to the truth. Is that correct, Mark?
Yeah, it is. And you know, a lot of people, they may know the passage in Lamentations 3, you know, steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, his mercies are new every morning. The problem is I don't think that many people understand that Jeremiah pronounced that over a situation that looked like a cultural train wreck. I mean, it looked like God had forgotten his people. It looked like he'd abandoned them. The temple's destroyed, the city is sacked, the people are taken captive. I mean, it gave the enemies of God reason to say, your God abandoned you. And yet Jeremiah has the theological and spiritual commitment and courage to say, no, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. And that's incredibly instructive. Excuse me. It's also incredibly powerful that believers in the midst of hardship would say, these truths I will not forget, even though the winds are blowing at a level that I've never seen them blow before. And I think that's when Christianity can shine really brightly, if we'll embrace these truths rather than just simply be upset that my life's not what I wanted it to be.
it's a year to practice lamentations, isn't it?
It sure feels like that. It feels like we all need a good dose of lamentations. You make a comment that says, lament shows us it's hard is hard, but hard is not always bad. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound like a message we all really want to hear.
Yeah. Well, we like one of those. We usually don't like to put those two together. So usually I have found people in my pastoral ministry experience and in my own life who are either hard is really hard, and then there's other people is are like, well, yeah, but hard isn't bad. And what I'm trying to do is put those two things together and say what hardship and difficulty does is it reminds us that two things can be true at the exact same time, that God is sovereign and yet life is really broken, that we live in a world filled with the negative effects of sin, and yet Jesus is going to come again and make it all right. And so what I'm trying to do is to call believers in that statement to realize that these are two truths that seem to be in tension, but they're not. Hard is hard. It is. Let's acknowledge 2020 in particular. This is a hard year. Let's not fake it and say, well, you know, let's just be honest. This is hard. And yet let's also be deeply theologically committed to the concept. But you know what? This is not bad. God is still good. And those two things need to coexist, I think, every day in the context of our lives.
So Ellen and I are Catholic Christians. And one of the things we do is we do breviary readings. And in the month of November, there was an excerpt from a guy named St. John Eudes. And he was a saint of the 17th century coming out of the French school of spirituality. And he wrote that the mysteries of Jesus are still yet to be accomplished in us and in his church. And that maybe lament is our participation in this perfection, so that Christ has to work through us in order to perfect us. And lamentations is that road. And I tell you, you as a Protestant pastor made me understand this Catholic saint for the first time. And I really appreciated that.
Well, good. Well, you know, the Apostle Paul says something similar. He says that we're filling up what is lacking in Christ's afflictions. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of in my suffering, I'm demonstrating to others what the suffering of Jesus looks like. And in Paul's epistle in the book of Romans, he talks about that this present difficulty is producing in us something that is far greater, this glory that is yet to be revealed. And so, you know, that's where we can see the hardship and see the suffering as this is God's way of making me like Jesus. And if he used suffering to make Jesus like Jesus, he's going to use suffering to make me like Jesus.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that.
See, you're part of the 2020 problem there, Michelle.
I know, I probably am. But I tell you, it's been hard to even talk about grief.
The thing about grief is that it's scary. And one of the reasons that we resist it and deny it and we want to avoid it is because it creates questions, emotional responses, and tensions that are really uncomfortable. Just as an example, you know, I've written this book, I've done a lot of study on lament, and one of our friends, their son was walking through what would end up being terminal cancer in their adult college-age son. And I remember one small group meeting where he's literally slumped over a footstool in their living room with our group, and he is just wailing in tears and calling out to God saying, why, Lord, why? And I have not only a theological category for what he's doing, I not only have studied this, but like I could even guide him in this prayer form, but when he was doing it, I had to resist the internal reaction of wanting him to stop. Even though I knew what he was doing was right and helpful and biblical, everything within me humanly wanted to say, please stop, because his grief was scary. And that's, I think, what we all have to wrestle with in the context of what it means to navigate the contours and the challenges of sorrow.
That's a beautiful picture you paint in just our grief tears us from the inside and goes outward. Mm-hmm. And there is a time as such in your grief that you just fall over in your nothingness and cry out to God. And our instinct as brothers and sisters is to try to get you through it quicker. And it also is this feeling of, oh, this grief is now reaching out and enveloping me, and I am becoming more saddened in a way I hadn't want to. I want to keep my grief a little bit separated. But it just kind of connects us all back together, that we walk through the good times together and we carry each other and lean on each other through the worst of times too.
Yeah, it is an opportunity for the body of Christ to be at its best mm-hmm. when we understand the arc of God's redemption, creation, fall, redemption, restoration. We know the plan. That's the plan. We know that Revelation is in the Bible for a reason. Jesus is going to come back and make everything right. And in the meantime, we live in a broken world. So what ought we to do? We ought to lament together, place our hope in God's grace, and help each other to make it when the world is falling apart. And what a beautiful opportunity for the church to not only be leaders of lament, but also interpreters to the world of both what's wrong and where our ultimate hope lies.
Absolutely. Your book makes Good Friday pop because Good Friday is not the whole story.
Right.
It's actually the beginning of the story. Or it's the second day of the story. But it is. So it was the first time that sort of looking at it, realizing Good Friday is not the whole story.
Right.
The whole story is 2 days later.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's right.
And that's where. And so maybe, you know, Ellen, maybe for people who are suffering right now to understand that this is not the entire story.
And that's our hope as Christians and people of faith. We live with that hope inside us. You know, we're Easter people. We are. We're Sunday people because we know what's coming at the end of this. Mark, I can't thank you enough for shedding some light. And for our listeners, we're speaking with Mark Vigrup, which I'm sure I said that wrong again, Mark. And his book is Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy. And if you want to look for it, it's available on Amazon. And you spell Mark's last name, Vroegop. Mark is also a lead pastor at College Park Church in Indianapolis. So, Mark, just thank you so much. What a beautiful way you have of sharing Lamentations with us.
Well, again, thanks for your interest in this, I think, really helpful and redemptive topic. And for every grief that your listeners are walking through, I pray that God will meet them with the special kind of grace that he's met us with in our difficulties.
Oh, thank you, Mark. We really appreciate that. God bless your work and your congregation.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Convergence. I'm Ellen Taylor alongside Michelle McAloon. It's a show where we break down deep topics of faith and culture, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of Convergence. Have a great day.